When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
If you're thinking, I should go for a run today, but it looks like it could rain, Sierra says save on epic rain jackets. If you're also thinking, but I can't go out in these beat up old running shoes, Sierra says save on top brand running shoes. And if you're still thinking, but I'm also busy performing brain surgery, well then we say, you really should have led with that. Sierra, let's get moving to your local store, like now, go.
Hello and welcome to episode 3 of the 2024 Middlesex County Cricket League podcast. My name's Dan Huff from Twickenham C. We've just had a test series finish in India. The light is definitely more generous in the evenings and in the mornings. Cricket is not far away. And so we've got plenty that we are planning to talk about tonight. As ever, I'm going to do that with Salman Ali from North London. Sal, how are you?
Good evening, Dan. Yeah, I mean, today's weather is not very cricket weather, is it? It's miserable.
It's been pouring down all day, hasn't it? It's been rubbish.
Horrible, man, horrible. But, you know, hopefully there's better days to come.
I'm thinking Groundsman might quite like it, really. Stuff's going to grow, right?
That's true. Yeah, bit of green.
Yeah. Obligatory first question, Sal, just for the audience. We are recording on Sunday evening. You, as an Arsenal fan, probably wanted Liverpool to draw with Man City, and they did. You're going to win the league?
That we should flip the questions, actually. I should talk about Shrewsbury, because obviously, I was correct last time, and maybe you should talk about Arsenal. So I will say Shrewsbury going to stay up, and I can ask you, Dan, will Arsenal win the league, do you think? What's your opinion?
No.
Okay, there you go. Done.
But I ain't putting a mortgage on that. I mean, it couldn't be much closer, could it?
And, I mean, as I said, it's the 31st of March now, all roads lead through the Emirates, Etihad. Huge game now. Won't decide the league, but obviously we'll have some say in what might happen as we go on. But 10 games to go, as they say in football, every game's a cup final now.
Yeah, and entertaining stuff, I have to say. It's been a good weekend, right? You beat the Bees, which I guess was part of the plan, and then you got the result you want. Once at Anfield.
Yeah, Tuesday's the next one. Porto and Champions League will win there, and they'll have a nice little break and come back refreshed. Put a big one on March 31st, yeah.
Confidence, I like it.
Good win for you guys, Dan. 2-1 away at Port Vale, I heard you went.
Yeah, we went up to Stoke yesterday, to Burslem. Not the most salubrious part of the United Kingdom, but six-pointer, and we managed to win, which is... It's not something we do very often away from home. So, yeah, good day. Good drive back down the M6 last night. The world is a better place than it might otherwise have been.
They're my second team now, Dan, because of you now. So I always follow the results after Arsenal ones.
Marvellous. Oh, well, we'll drag you in. We'll get you some
games. Yeah, I'll go one day.
So that's super end to that.
Yeah, I'll be up for that, definitely, yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm pleased that our guest today is also, I think, has got a bit of a football background as well, certainly a football fan, and really pleased to speak to Alan Coleman, who's the Director of Cricket at Middlesex. Alan, how are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Good to see you both, and thanks for having me on.
I'm guessing you have perhaps a rather less positive narrative about events at the Ashburton Grove over the weekend, right? You're a Bees fan, yeah?
I'm a Bees fan, so not somebody who's jumped on the bandwagon lately, but somebody who's been going since I was sort of 5 years old. And yeah, disappointing to take Arsenal that far and not quite get over the line and get a point at the end of it. But I think we'll be okay. I think there's a few worse teams than Brentford this year in the league. So I think we'll hang on and scrape through and hopefully be playing Premier League football again next year.
And it could be a few have got a few fewer points than they've got now, right? I mean, Everton and Forest are out of the woods in terms of their points deductions, which is, I mean, you don't want to stay up on the basis of other teams getting deducted points. But on the other hand, it's going to help, isn't it?
Yeah, I think no matter how you stay up, if you're going to get 160 million quid of TV money or whatever it is, I think they'll take any way that they can to stay up at the moment.
160 million.
Yeah, I think they'll be okay.
Yeah, the damage that some of the lower division clubs could do with 160 million quid, fantastically large numbers. All good. Not quite the budget that you've got at Middlesex, I'm guessing, though. Alan, I guess that would be a fair comment without wanting you to reveal any trade secrets. But can you start for 10? Can you just talk to us about what the job entails? I mean, it's a great title, I have to say. It sounds good. What does it mean on a day-to-day basis?
It does, and I think, yeah, professional sport's gone down that line, isn't it, of directors of cricket or football or whatever. And in cricket, I think the role used to be a tracksuit role a bit more. Now, very rarely am I in a tracksuit. I don't do any coaching or anything like that. I leave that up to the specialist. But I'd say that you would sort of describe my role as kind of looking at strategy and then the structures that you need to put in place to make that strategy work, the people that you need, and then kind of the way that you operate and the processes that you go through. And that's kind of the four main areas, I'd say, of the job. And obviously in the people pieces, then contracts, signings, recruitment, retention, dealing with agents, dealing with players, that sort of part of the role is quite significant now, along with sort of all the other bits. And from my side, I'm not only Middlesex, but I'm Sunrisers as well, which is our women's professional side. So I sort of oversee both of those programs. So yeah, that's the sort of role. I think they're different at every county, depending on the size and the demands of the county. But yeah, in a nutshell, just sort of trying to oversee things and make sure the ship sort of remains as steady as we can.
Can I ask a question about the Sunrisers? And I feel very ignorant in asking this, but exactly how much cricket do the Sunrisers play? How many tournaments are they in? What sort of formats are they playing? I mean, it must be quite a lot of shorter format cricket, right?
Yeah, so we only white ball cricket. So it's 50 over and T20, home and away fixtures in the main. Not quite home and away in the T20, but home and away in the 50 over. Runs all the way through the season, obviously misses that period in July, August when the 100 is played. But yeah, a full programme. We've got 11, 12 professional players and then a few sort of part-time pros who top up that number as well. And it's a really good programme. And the girls played phenomenally well last year and finished in fourth, which out of eight, which, you know, on the face of it doesn't seem a huge achievement. But when you consider the team was only launched in 2020 and before then, a number of the other teams were professional in the Kia Super League, it's quite a good growth from the side to finish in fourth. So I'm really proud of what the girls have done and what they continue to do.
Sounds really positive.
Yeah, point out, you're more into detail with Middlesex, Alan. I know you had a very good career in MTCL. You started at Wickham House, then on to East Cope. I'm looking at your stats from the league website. Remember, it goes back to 2001. Best bowler 7/27, and your highest score, I'm not sure from the full details, it's 96 not out, and your captain declared 7 down. Why didn't you get 100? What happened there? Was that some kind of, was the overs run out or something? Or
are you speaking to him yet or not?
I remember the story very well. We were playing North Middlesex for Wickham House. We batted first. I don't know what the declaration was, but we had a plan to declare at 50 overs, and Captain Ben Taylor is a phenomenal bloke and a very good, talented all-round cricketer. Said to me I could stay out there, and I actually walked off and said, no, we're declaring because we said we would declare at this amount of overs. So I remember the game vividly, and I never got a league 100. So it's probably my own fault, but I do think we won. I think we bowled out North Mid in that game. So I guess worth it in the end. But yeah, some very fond memories of playing at Wickham House and at Eastcote in the league.
Great. Now, how did you sort of start your career from the beginning? What was sort of your route into cricket from a young age?
Yeah, so my dad, by his own admission, was a very average club cricketer. He played in Surrey, actually, in the Surrey Slazenger League for a club called Hampton, who played in Carlisle Park. So I grew up just running around there as a 6 months old. And then time came for my older brother to join a club that had junior cricket, recommended to Wickham House. And a guy, you know, we turned up at the club for my brother to join. And Ken Cross, who was the club legend who ran everything during that time, said, well, what about him as well? And my parents thought I'd be too young at six, but I wasn't. And they took me on from 6 years old and I started at Wickham House. And then all the way through the Wickham House age groups until as a pro with Middlesex, Wickham House in Division 3 of the County League at that stage. And Middlesex asked me, or told me really, that I had to go and play in the Premier League. And that's how I ended up at Eastcote. And then I had, even when I finished playing for Middlesex, I had sort of 10 great years with Eastcote. I was very lucky, two phenomenally good clubs full of amazing people, a bit like, you know, Sal with you at North London and Dan at Twickenham, just clubs full of phenomenally good people. And I was incredibly lucky with that. And that's sort of my league career in a nutshell.
That's made me think, Sal, have you ever declared on someone who was on 96 or above?
Never. Never.
Well, I threatened it once and the guy had about 10 balls to get three runs, I think it would have been. And came marching down a wicket, bowled.
You mean, you see that way he's out, so there's nothing, you know, no decision to make, is it?
You've made himself, yeah. That's my line, isn't it? Yeah, you missed it, mate. That's your problem, not mine. But yeah, I do remember that quite vividly, actually. But there we go. In terms of, so how did you become director of cricket then, Alan? What was the progression there? Is it something you thought you were going to do, or you thought you were going to go into cricket? Was it like most things in life where it sort of appeared on the horizon from nowhere?
Yeah, it was never a plan. Through my sort of Middlesex professional time, I was very lucky actually in that a guy called Phil Knappett, who was involved, worked at Middlesex from Barnet Cricket Club, just sort of encouraged me to do some coaching courses. And then when my playing career stopped, I just slowly moved into coaching and worked my way through there, ran the academy at Middlesex from 2012, then was promoted to work with Stuart Law when he came in as head coach, as assistant. And then Stuart left in 2020 after the 2021 season. Angus Fraser had sort of stepped aside from director of cricket, and they moved me into the director of cricket role. So just very fortunate, really, a bit of right place, right time, and a bit of hard work, I guess, along the way. And you sort of end up in a director of cricket role. But no, there was never a plan to do this job. I think the thing I just discovered was that I could play cricket. I was all right, but I was a better coach and a better administrator than I probably ever was a player.
And sort of daft as it might seem, though, I mean, how do you judge your success in the role? Now, again, I don't want this to sound like it's your annual appraisal. That's not the point at all. But I'm just saying, when you go into a year, is Middlesex getting promoted in four-day cricket? Is that the aim? Or is that not really your aim? You employ other people to try and make sure that happens. You're sort of a level above that? Or how would you broadly look to define success in what you do?
Yeah. I think with that the buck does stop with me, even though I'm not directly involved in team performance. The buck does stop with me, and therefore, you know, our aim this year will be to get promoted out of Division Two. We've got some other performance metric that we'll look at that I'll be judged upon, and you know, without wanting to use too much business speak, we do have KPIs that we're trying to achieve across all formats and the way that we operate, and held to account by the CEO and the board for those. But yeah, although I'm not out there throwing the balls and kicking bins around the changing room, I am ultimately accountable for what we do and the people that we employ. So the buck does stop with me on that sense.
I did nearly use KPIs, but I thought it's a Sunday evening. It's a cricket podcast. I'm not going to go down that route. I have enough of them at work. But yeah, I can imagine, you know, that's an obvious thing that you would have. Sal.
Alan, so in terms of so you obviously started as a coach, and now you seem to have more of a like behind the scenes job in terms of, I mean, more, I'm saying admin, I suppose, but obviously negotiating and dealing with players and contracts, etc. Do you miss the sort of coaching side? Are you still coaching, or is it that totally devoid of your role now?
Yeah, we've made a conscious decision to sort of take a step back from it and to create that bit of distance and allow the coaching team to do their thing. I do miss it. I miss the daily interaction with players in that way and just that feeling of there's something you can do or say that could make them turn an average day into a good day or a good day into a great day. And that's the ability that a coach does have working with a player. So I don't get that. I guess the thing I don't get is the instant gratification now that the coach would get from seeing a player perform. But I still do get that long-term sort of sense of pride over a season as to how we play and the styling, you know, how we perform, how successful we are, and the style of cricket that we play as well.
Where does the league fit into that? Because obviously the current Middlesex squad has got a whole load of players who have played cricket in the Middlesex County Cricket League. And we know that Middlesex notices what happens in the County League. It notices the junior players. I mean, you were a product of it yourself. You know, it is a pathway in. But on a day-to-day basis, is there any particular patterns in the way you interact with the league? Do you just look at the stats and say, X seems to be doing quite well, I might have a look at him? Or how does it work?
Yeah, so a mixture of things, really. So we do have people who go out and watch, and we do take note of the stats. We do have people who go out and watch. We do have a network of people, especially Mark Lane, who runs our player pathway, has a network of people, good people around the clubs that he speaks to on a regular basis, and they will recommend players that they've seen from more so from the opposition than themselves. So yeah, we try to be as visible and kind of as present as we can be with it. But, you know, things are noticed, performances are looked at without a doubt. And not only the runs and wickets that people get, but again, the way in which they get them. There's many indicators that you can look at, which might help you determine the future potential success or not of a certain player. So yeah, the league is incredibly important to us, and it's incredibly important that our pros do go back and play. I think the perception would be sometimes that the Middlesex players don't want to go back and play league cricket. Actually, they're heavily encouraged to do so, and it's never a player saying no. It's if they're not allowed to play, that's because we've said they can't. So, you know, that's the sort of crux of it, really. But league's vitally important to me, and it's a great grounding for any young player, I would say. You know, I think you look at a lot of the success stories of players who had a little bit of an early taste of adult league cricket, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15. And those club environments, not only, it's easy for us just to look at the Premier League, isn't it? But the club environments down, you know, the second team, 13, fourth teams are as equally important at stages of development as is playing Premier League cricket.
Yeah, that's quite interesting, because we found that at Twickenham, in that I think Blake Cullen played for us twice last year, but if Blake could have had his way, he'd have played for us 10 times. But of course, you know, you've got to protect people from themselves sometimes. You know, you're paying their wages. You need to make sure that they don't do things that can put their future with Middlesex in danger. And we totally understood that. Yeah, you know, as I say, we'd always wanted to play. But you know, the role of the league is to help the players improve, help the players keep at the top of their game. We always understood that. And I totally get that the league would say no occasionally. It just doesn't, the Middlesex would say no occasionally. It doesn't quite fit in the development of that player, particularly when they're coming back from injuries, because I bet that the last thing you want is them to go off and bowl 10 overs on a Saturday and get injured, desperately trying to win a club match. That probably wouldn't be top of the agenda.
No, you're right there. And the coming back from injury debate is an interesting one, in that part of you goes, yeah, this is a great opportunity to go and play some cricket and get some cricket under your belt. But often people come back at 70% fit, as we would know, and do you want them to be in a really supervised environment with a medical team around them? Or do you trust that they're going to go and make the right decisions in a game? And if it doesn't quite feel right, they're going to pull out. But if they do that, then they let down the other 10 blokes who've looked forward to this game of cricket all week and are trying their nuts off to have success for their team and their club across 18 games. So it's actually quite a nuanced and tricky debate to have and to get right. I think a pro player playing in the league cricket has to be right for Middlesex, has to be right for the player, but has to ultimately as well be right for the club, has to be the right thing for the club in that moment. And sometimes if we get that balance right and we ignore the needs of a club or the player or even ourselves, that's where an issue is created. So I think we have to be sympathetic to all three things.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense to me. Before we get to the pros, though, I mean, the junior pathways have got to be massively important. Clearly they are for Middlesex. They're important for any county club, right? And Middlesex looks to me, at least, as if it's got something working quite well there, because we've got junior players who are now playing senior cricket for Middlesex. When does that really start? Just for those who are unaware, when would you start looking at players potentially as having the ability to go all the way through in professional cricket?
Yeah, it's a really interesting, something I'm fascinated in. And generally, there are three sort of profiles of player that will play professional cricket. The first is the early high flyer. You see them at 8, 9, 10, 11 years old, and they're the superstar. And, you know, for you, you walk across Twickenham Green and you see an under-11 Colts game, and you just know that kid's very, very good, you know. And that's the first sort of routine. We then get a group of players who seem to emerge at 13, 14, 15. I think they're the kind of puberty and developmenty sort of age. They start growing, they grow into their body. You know, you get a group of players who emerge at that age, and then you generally get a group of late developers who are 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, even 21. And a lot of that is just growth and development based. A bit of it is potentially maturity based. And I think the other part of it is probably interest based as well. There are some people who probably don't realise how good they are and that cricket could be an option for them. And there are probably others at the other end of the scale who think it's the be-all and end-all, and they've probably not quite got enough. So they're the three sort of ages. So we start identifying early, but the key for us is you don't want to pigeonhole a player and you don't want to write anyone off. Yeah. Because, you know, the element of surprise is one of the greatest things in cricket. You know, somebody emerges and does a job that you don't expect them to do and develop skills in a way that you don't expect. You know, Toby Roland Jones, I know in the Surrey League for Sunbury, was a batter all the way through, didn't really start bowling until his late teens and has played for England. You know, Steve Eskenazi was phenomenal in the league for Stanmore, was seen as a red ball cricketer. He's now one of the leading white ball players in not only in domestic cricket, but across franchise cricket as well. So these stories are out there, and we just have to be open to those possibilities, because we've all seen them at club level, school level, and we see it at county level as well.
Yeah, and I can imagine that, you know, and you're going to have 14-year-old, 15-year-olds who are brilliant, and then they discover the vices that hit many, you know, that they might not prove the right characters to go on and be professional sportsmen. And that's part of life too, right? Yeah, you know, you've got to be prepared for these pathways to go in different directions.
Alan, so how's the role different from September, obviously, up to when the season starts? So you obviously end in September, the championship finishes, then a bit of time off, and then what do you sort of do sort of the months of October leading up to sort of March time? And then obviously when the season starts as well.
So yeah, we do a lot of, so sort of that September, October, November, we're planning basically the whole of the winter, the whole of the pre-season. By that stage, unless it's an overseas player, most of our recruitment is done. So you almost work in a sort of 6 months advanced way in this role. So generally the recruitment for 2024 is done by August 2023. So, you know, you're sort of 6 months in advance of the time period. So yeah, during that winter phase, a lot of planning around what the season's going to look like, the schedule, how do we maximize our time, our training schedule. And then when the summer starts, that's when you kind of, you know, immediately, as soon as April comes around, my head will be on June, and the first moment you can approach an out of contract player from another county. So what a lot of people maybe don't know is that cricket doesn't have a deadline day. But as of June the 1st, if that player is out of contract in that calendar year, you can approach them. So you get a 6 month before window. So we do a lot of that recruitment planning stuff, March, April, May. We sign up any one of our players that we don't want to run down their contract. And so while the season is going, my head is already looking at the next season, really, and who we might bring in, what players we may have to let go to afford it, and all of those sorts of things. And then the other interesting part of it is running alongside that is franchise cricket, players being approached right, left and center, agents, you know, pushing their players on you, which is their job. And there's no, you know, that's not meant to be a criticism at all. So you get this really interesting mix of sort of roles and the way that things pan out during a calendar year, really. But it is every day is different, and there are a number of sort of different challenges all the time, really. And I think from our perspective now, the availability of players and the recruitment of players is an increasingly big part of the role, because cricketers move now. You know, the county cricket I grew up watching, the player really only moved county when they weren't getting in the first team. Now you get first team players moving to other first teams. And that's been a significant shift, I think, in the last 10, 15, 20 years.
Well, they do say a day's not wasted if you learn something new. I never knew 1st of June was a big deadline in the cricket calendar. That's fascinating. I didn't know that at all. So I can see why that you know, it's a big issue to try and get your recruitment right in the second half of the summer. But it did make me think, so without wanting to get you to divulge again too many trade secrets, when you're going to go and approach players, does it matter that we're in Division 2 at the moment? Are you looking to say, look, 2025, we're going all out for Division 1? Is it an issue? Because certainly the narrative and the background music would be that the players who want to play for England might well want to be in Division 1, right? How do you get around that? Or is it not as big as I imagine it might be?
No, I think it is. And at that time when we were approaching players this time, you know, in June last year, we were probably sitting fifth or sixth in Division 1. Not many people probably thought we were going down. We only went down, you know, in the last session of the last day of the season, you know. So yeah, I mean, I think you will get players who look at it and say, I want Division 1 cricket. But my role, I guess, without wanting to do too many sport cliches, is to sell them the bigger picture and the project. And where we're going is, yeah, we're in Division 2 at the moment, but our aim is sustainable success at the top of Division 1, and this is how we're going to get there. And part of my job is presenting these potential players with our plan. And this is where we're going, and this is how you fit our plan. I'm trying to sell it to them that way. We obviously then have the added benefit of we play quite a lot of games at the home of cricket, and it's quite appealing for most players to move into London and come and play there. So that certainly does make my job a little bit easier.
I can imagine that. I can also imagine agents. I mean, you play down there that any problematic roles that agents may have, but I can imagine with franchise cricket being what it is and players quite quickly upping sticks and going to another part of the world for a period of time, that there must be some challenges there about trying to make sure you get the best for Middlesex out of the players that are contracted to you.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Two guys drove to work. Neither guy wore a seatbelt. One guy got a ticket. One guy didn't. The same two guys drove home. One guy wore a seatbelt. One guy didn't. One guy made it home. The guy not wearing his seatbelt didn't. Don't risk it. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.
Sergeant and Mr. Smith, you're gonna love this house.
Bunk beds in a closet?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
Yeah. It's a hugely, again, underappreciated part of county, even at county level. So we've got a professional squad of 21 players for 2024. 18 of those have got agents. So the only three that don't are two senior players who look after themselves because, you know, they've played for England and they're okay. And there's the youngest member of our squad doesn't have an agent.
Give him time.
Everyone else in between has one. So
he'll,
yeah,
he'll get one before long, I'm sure.
It's just a part. It's just a big part of the role. Agent just tries to get the best for their players, tries to earn them the most amount of money they can. It's a short career. I've no issue with that whatsoever. The more franchise cricket, the more international cricket a player can play, the better they're paid. So, yeah, agents are, you know, incredibly proactive. And in the main, you know, there's no real horror stories in cricket. They're good people. They're honest. They're upfront. And it's not like, you know, if a player doesn't come to Middlesex, there's only 17 other sides they can sign for. And I know all the other 17 people who do the same role as I do. So it's not as cutthroat as maybe you might imagine with football and people undercutting each other and that sort of stuff. That doesn't really happen. But yeah, they're a necessary part of modern day cricket now, given the number of competitions that a young player or any player can get in.
And do you network with other directors of cricket? Does every county have a director of cricket? I sort of assume they have somebody who fills the role, even if they don't have that title. But would you say that the directors of cricket get on? Do they make a point of exchanging information? Or is it, hang on a minute, we are businesses as well. We don't want to be best buddies with people who, in many ways, are our direct opponents.
Yeah. Well, there is a WhatsApp group. We have a directors of cricket WhatsApp group. And the cricket tragic in me loves the fact that, and it's ludicrous, if you said to the 15-year-old me, you're in a WhatsApp group with Darren Goff and Alex Stewart, it's mental. It blows my mind most days. But yeah, the group work together pretty closely, I would say. We're obviously all out for ourselves and trying to do the best for our team. But there's a real nice balance of trying to get what's right for the game. And I think, without, again, wanting to be too cliched, I think everyone appreciates that we are custodians of county cricket at the moment. We will all get sacked at some point or we'll all move on. Somebody else will take our job, but we've got to try and ensure that this game, you know, outlasts us really, and is in a better place than what we found it. So yeah, there's a really nice network of directors of cricket. We help each other a lot, and if I'm honest, most are facing the same challenges, which are how do I eat the most out of my budget on a weekly basis, you know, and barring two or three of the massive sides, the rest of us are sitting there trying to be as cute as we can to ensure that we get the best players for the least amount of money.
I mean, and if it helps, and I always think this is a story that in and of itself doesn't mean much, but I think it's a positive point about county cricket in that every ball is now visible, right? You can see every ball in every game. And I see that at home. My kids will come home from school and they'll quite happily put an hour's worth of county cricket on at the back. And the point is that, I mean, one of them's just obsessed and I've got Frankenstein's monster on my hands and all that. And I'll deal with him, mate. But the other one's like, all right. Well, they're 6 down, are they? They take the new ball. He's 8, right? And this is, it's just there. And I think having it just there and not having to go to the games, which I'd love to do, but I can't do it, not frequently anyway, I think that's a real plus for county cricket. And I think there'll be more and more people who will have some access to it now, which has got to help the product, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. And the actual image that we generally have is that there are people sitting in their offices pretending to work with two screens up, one of them on YouTube following Middlesex playing Surrey in a county championship game, and the other one pretending to bash out a few emails.
Are you spying
on
me?
That's sort of our image.
This is where this is going.
That's our sort of general image of it. But yeah, I hadn't thought of the kid coming in from school can watch 2 hours of county cricket if they're home at 4 o'clock. Which I could never do. You know, I had to, if I wanted to watch Middlesex play, and we did, you had to go up on a Sunday for a Sunday league game. You know, that was generally how I watched county cricket as a young man growing up. So no, it's a huge advantage and a huge positive. And I think for the players, it helps them boost their own profiles a lot quicker as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Sal. I was going to ask you, Alan, so you've got some players away at the moment, Australia playing. I think they're due back soon, obviously, because pre-season must be imminent now. In terms of that process of playing abroad, and I noticed some academy was also out overseas, do you recommend for them to go abroad, or is that something they do by themselves, or is that, how's that whole process work? Do you fix clubs up for them, you know, in Australia, wherever they tend to go to, or is that, again, down to them, they're on a call to work out what they want to do and, you know, where they're going to go?
It's a case-by-case basis, really, in the sense that some are heavily suggested to that they go away. Others will come to us and say, I'd really like to go away this winter, can I? We will work through with them what their options are, where they want to go. I think some of them will want to go just for a life experience. Some will want to go for cricket experience. Some will want a bit of both. And how do we best find the right possibility for them? So with our group, we had quite a few in Adelaide. Most of them sorted themselves out. We helped one or two just with the finer details, using some of our contacts and some of the agents, ironically, who you know, can help a player get somewhere. But yeah, I think this generation of cricketers lost out, actually, with that COVID time. They lost out on 2 winters, really, of going abroad. So you've got a group of players now who are 23 who, a few years ago, that a 23-year-old would have probably had 4 or 5 winters away and played all over Australia. But now they've missed out on that period. So I think this year we had so many away just because they were catching up. And I think that it's a real positive. I did it as a player. I went to New Zealand, and it's a real positive, I think, for a young player to be able to do that. And we see it from a club cricket perspective. We get the other side of it, don't we? We get the young Kiwi, Aussie, South African player, you know, or wherever who comes over and helps improve our side and is good around the club and does a bit of coaching. And it's nice to be able to reciprocate in that way.
Well, also, I mean, that's good for you guys. But Eskenazi was one, wasn't he? Came over to play for Stanmore and ended up becoming a pro for you guys, didn't he? So it sort of works twofold, doesn't it? In some ways, you might get the benefits of that player. Yeah, it should be coming pro with you guys.
Exactly. And we had that with, you know, my East Coast experience. Tom Scollet did that. He came over, dominated league cricket in that period, sort of 2008, 9, 10, and ended up playing county cricket for Middlesex, you know? So it definitely does work both ways. And I think without wanting to get too much into the politics of the league, obviously we, the Middlesex League, still have the rule about people having not played first-class cricket being able to be overseas players. Obviously other leagues allow first-class players to come over as overseas players. And it's a really interesting sort of balance of what is best and what isn't best, you know? But I think we've seen some, you know, in my time, seeing some phenomenally talented overseas players play in the Middlesex League.
Okay, Alan, as you might well know, we tend to end our winter podcasts with 10 questions. They are often quite similar, but that's because we generally like to know what people think of those questions. We do edit them a little bit, depending on who we're speaking to. As I've said to everybody before, the first answer is always the best answer, even if it gets you in trouble, because it'll mean it's the most interesting one, and that's what we really care about here. But if you want to take a pause and have a thought, a think as well, then you're, of course, welcome. So we'll kick off. Sal, do you want to fire away with number one?
I was actually going to ask you who the most famous person's phone number you had, but you really answered that, Darren Goff or Alex Stewart. So
no.
Oh, someone else.
I've got a better one.
Got it.
I've got Sachin Tendulkar's phone number.
Wow. Okay. Can't be that, can you?
Have you ever rung it?
I think I've spoken to him on the phone, yeah. Cool. Obviously, his son Arjun was around playing a bit at Ealing at the time and that sort of stuff. So Arjun's a wonderful, wonderful young man. And yeah, I think Sachin's would be the most famous in my phone.
Pretty. Can you beat that, Sal?
No way at all. You're Dan Hoff, mate. Anyway, so your first question is, it's a regular one. So TMS or still Sky Sports or TNT, I suppose now. They've got some coverage during the winter. So yeah, what's your sort of preferable choice of the two? TMS or Sky Sports?
I would always be Sky Sports with that. Yeah, I don't have TNT. That's the first thing. So I haven't really seen a huge amount of the cricket this winter. But I'm very much Sky Sports over TMS.
I think it's the quality of the analysis.
I think that's it. He's the working class lad from Feltham in me. I think that's what that is.
I like that angle too. Yeah, we'll leave that one there, but I do like that angle. Cool. Number two, always interested about all-rounders. These great individuals who we all know, we've all sort of seen and transformed a cricketing day. And my question is always, are you more a Botham man or a Stokes man? Or is there another all-rounder that beats the both of them?
So interestingly, this is a debate that's often had in the change room. Stokes, Flintoff, or both of them is the debate that's often thrown out there, because you've got coach, player, and everyone's seen a bit of everyone. So yeah, quite an interesting debate. I think you ought to go Stokes.
The only problem I have with that is he don't really bowl anymore. So I mean, I know when he has bowled, he's made an impact, and of course he only bowled five overs in the last month and a half. He still took a wicket in that. He makes the impact, but I'm not even sure. Is he genuinely an all-rounder now?
I mean, he is doing it on one leg in India on flat pitches, though. I mean, in his defence.
Yeah, fair comment.
So, Alan, the next two questions are based around club cricket. Okay, so imagine a scenario: you six off the last ball in the game. Who would you want to them? Who would you nominate to face that ball? Okay, you play club cricket, six off the last ball.
From the teams that I've played in, East Coast, I've already mentioned his name, Tom Scholey. He was as clean a striker of the ball that I played with. In my Wickham House time, Sal, you'll probably remember him, a guy called Jason Allen, who was a tall, fast bowler at Shepherd's Bush and then Wickham House. He hit a long cricket ball and he regularly hit the ball into the tennis courts at Wickham House. So it'd be either one of those two.
Excellent. And it's got to be someone who backs himself as well. It's not going to be someone who just randomly swings a bat, isn't it? Someone who you think, Alan, he'd love this. Yeah. He'd be up for this challenge. He'd think about where to hit it, et cetera. And I can imagine Tom Scholey would fit into that.
Jason was a big guy, really good at the ball. Miles, I remember him. Good bowler.
Yeah. We'll turn it around. Number four, Alan, you need a wicket off the last ball. Let's imagine it's all day cricket. You need a wicket off the last ball. Who are you chucking it to? Or the last over then? Who's going to bowl it for you? Say yourself if you like. But let's assume you're not in the equation. And who's going to get the last over?
Certainly wouldn't ever say myself in that. I think if I didn't give his name, he's one of my best mates, and I think he would kill me if I didn't say so. Paul Metcalf opened the bowling for East Coast, got 30-odd wickets a year bowling down the hill, could pick a fight in a room on his own, was brilliant fun to play with. But what he did was I describe it with him as he had a relentless pursuit of a half-volley length. But that half-volley length, people seem to miss and nick it and whatever. So somebody, and I think James Fleming a couple of weeks ago said, you know, he picked Johnny Bruce because he always bowled a ball that would hit the stumps. And I think somebody like Paul Metcalf would be your man, because it's not going to go over the stumps with his low slingy action. So you've got a few dismissals to play with.
No, I like that one. That sounds good. Sal, number five.
This can be as a coach or a player if you want, Alan. So what's your favourite format, red ball or white ball?
Red ball. Red ball. And in the league, I loved the timed format. The 120 overs was a brilliant format that I loved playing in, created so much jeopardy through the day, you know, and the way that you so often got a result at the end was brilliant. So I love Red Bull cricket and I always will.
And in the first class circuit, I mean, it looks to me like there's a bit more money to be made in white ball cricket, right? But are there still players out there who, I mean, it looks to me like Stokes genuinely does really love playing red ball cricket and the jeopardy aspect of it, and the captaincy becomes, I think, altogether different. But do you think players now, if pushed, it's white ball, and not just because of the money, but because it's the easiest type of cricket for them to play?
No, I don't actually. Oh, and I'll tell you why. I think that the debate and challenge that, let's call it Bazball, I know he doesn't like the phrase, but we'll call it Bazball. The debate and challenge that Bazball created from a red ball perspective with how the batter should approach county championship cricket proved to me how many people want to play test cricket still. It was the hottest topic of debate in the last 12, 18 months has been, how should a red ball batter play county cricket now? Should they go out and try and score at five and over? Should they do the traditional grind it out, back till tee, try, you know, knock it around, try and be there at the end of the day, you know, get yourself 100 and then go on from there? You know, how important is a strike rate now to a batter in county cricket? And I think that, as I said, the debate that caused proved to me that people really still care about county cricket and still have real aspirations to play test cricket. So, yes, there will always be the glamour and the glitz of white ball, but I think there's something about that ultimate test of character and techniques is still Red Bull cricket.
That is really interesting. And I no real idea what the player narrative was on that, but deep down part, I was really pleased to hear it. You know, the ultimate test is test match cricket, right? Yeah. Yeah. Also, it's quite interesting, the narrative around Bazball, actually. And I wonder what your angle on this is, that, of course, Bazball apparently revolutionised cricket, apparently, and people were talking about it a lot more. And part of me was thinking, well, didn't the Australians do this about 20 years ago? Didn't they just go out and score 4 or 5 and over, be really positive and you know, look like a really good cricket team? But the second thing is, it might well have revolutionised the way some people thought about it, but England is still 8th in terms of the rankings for test match cricket. So we're not suddenly winning every game, even if we're playing a little bit differently. So I just wondered if the Bazball narratives were all a bit cliched, to use a word that you've used a couple of times. Is that a bit harsh? But I never really got it. It's just people being positive, isn't it?
I think it's a really good point. It's a really good point you make. You know, Hayden and Langer in the Australian team that's in my head opening the batting. You think of a Sehwag for India, you know, 20 years ago, how dominant he was and the speed in which he played multi-day cricket. So, yeah, I think there's always been an element of that positive nature that players play with. I guess it's how England have done it, isn't it? That what they've done is ripped up the conventional kind of MCC coaching manual to do it. And I think you would look at the players that I just mentioned there, and they still did it in a very dominant but relatively traditional, what we would call a traditional way. Whereas the way that the England players have done it has been with a complete freedom, really. And it is hard. And I think that the bit that it has challenged us all is challenged us all as to how we think about the game. And that's probably the bit that those players and teams that we spoke about there haven't really done. You know, they played the game in a positive way, but we've not thought about it differently. England are now making people think about international test cricket differently. But interestingly, we put England's results in the last 12 months and we attributed county championship scores to them. So how many points they would have got per game. And actually, England would finish 5th in the county championship with what they've done. So they wouldn't, you're right, they haven't blown the doors off and dominated cricket. It's been great and it's been thrilling to watch, but it hasn't necessarily gleaned the results that you might imagine that it would.
But even then, counter my own argument, I mean, I haven't really enjoyed the last 4 test matches in India, but I very much enjoyed the first one, and I've enjoyed watching most of the cricket they've played, almost regardless of the results. You know, they might well have not won as many as they might have wanted, but it's a product that's got a bit of sell-on value. I mean, it's definitely better watching them than it is Geoffrey Boycott. Sorry, Geoffrey, you know, as a fellow stodgy opening bat, but I'd rather watch the way we play cricket now, that's for sure. Back to more serious matters than that. We're talking food. And as you'll know, if you've listened to previous podcasts, Sal and I do like a bit of scram. You'll have tasted lots of first-class teas, Alan. Where are the highs and the lows? I don't know if you want to go down the lows. People might be offended. You don't need to go there. But what are the best ones? Where's the best county tea that you've had? Middlesex hosts exempted.
Middlesex hosts exempted. I think generally the food is pretty decent at most. I think it's disappointingly healthy now at most places as well. I think that's fair to say. In the role now, I try not to eat as much, because what you find as a player, and I think all club cricketers go for this as well, is you eat a lot as a player because you burn a load of calories. You stop playing, you still eat the same amount as a coach, but you're still a bit active. Now you move into director cricket, you're sitting on your backside all day, you still eat the same as when you were a player. So it's, you know, I have to watch the waistline. I don't try to eat at games if I can avoid it. But yeah, the Oval's good, always got a good spread of healthy food. Surrey get most things right. You know,
it can't say that. Was good. That's not, we can't have that in a bit of sex podcast.
Apologies, but they do.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, Lancashire was good last year, you know. So generally most of the big grounds look after you pretty well.
There you go, Lancashire. I remember watching that on YouTube, where one of the Lancashire players took an ice cream to the commentator. Was that against Middlesex? I think it was. Fascinating. I remember, you know, this is good stuff. And my kids were watching it with me. There you go, Sal. You probably didn't pick that up, but it was one of the things I remember from discovering county cricket on the ECB's app last season. Over to you, Sal.
Alan, just confirm, is Lord's the best, though?
Yeah, experience-wise, it's basically a Michelin-style restaurant, really, that you eat in, isn't it? You know, it's in terms of the food that you get, and you're incredibly lucky. Teas have been toned down a lot, though. They're a lot healthier than they were. No, there's no cakes on offer at tea anymore, but But lunch is still a delight. And I know Flem a couple of weeks ago mentioned about the double dessert days and stuff and having to keep an eye on the players with that, which I think is very fair.
Only got 20 minutes, though, to be fair. You can't eat that much in 20. Well, less than 20 minutes if you're fielding by the time you got off the pitch, isn't it? So, you know, you're going to have to be quite conservative there. So,
back to the league. So, which was your favourite ground to play? Away grounds, obviously. I know in East Coast, Wickham has a great place to play cricket, but where did you like travelling away to in the league?
I loved playing at Teddington, not because we ever got a result there. We never did. Teddington, you think of Teddington, you turned up, you were never sure if they were really interested or not. And then come 6 o'clock, you're sitting there and they've given you another hammering again. And you're like, I don't know how this happened. Paul Dancy's got another sevenfer against you. And you're like, dude, like, how's this happened? But I mean, and credit to the club now. Obviously, I grew up playing a lot of junior cricket because, you know, Wickham House, Twickenham, Teddington in the same area at that stage. So I played a lot of junior cricket at Teddington. And then what they've done with the ground now is absolutely phenomenal. That clubhouse is astounding, really, and that project. And they deserve massive credit for that, for what they've done. So, yeah, great. Really enjoyed the people at Teddington. Again, great families. You know, I grew up with the Keatley family, sort of, you know, similar ages to me, and a load of other really, really good people there. So, yeah, Teddington's always been a fond favourite of mine. Nothing to do with the fact that it's about 15 minutes from my house. That's got nothing to do with it.
Well, it's a fair comment. I mean, but having said that, Flem mentioned in our previous edition that he liked playing at Enfield. And Enfield's bloody miles from where I live, but I did like playing at Enfield. You know, I like batting at Enfield. So there are certain grounds that are a long, long way away. Look, Winchmore Hill. Can't not like playing at Winchmore Hill. It's a lovely place to play cricket, even though it's, you know, I've got to leave 4 hours before the start. But yeah, all good. Next one. Right. So in terms of the grounds, we get that. In terms of the clubs you like playing against, what's the most memorable match you ever played in the league? What is the one that you would say, yeah, that's the one. I'll never forget that one.
There are, as a team performance, we played at Stanmore. I think they got 330, belting hot day, flat wicket there. And we knocked it off. Adam Rossington got a bucket load of runs and Eastcote knocked it off with a bit of time to spare. And Stanmore were, you know, obviously league winners this year, but just always a very competitive side, tricky bowlers. Mukesh Bhatt, wasn't it? Just used to get wickets for fun. And they were a very, very good side. Yeah, tough place to play. And with a little bit of a local rivalry there between Eastcote and Stanmore as well, not a million miles away. So a healthy rivalry, I will say. But yeah, that's probably the Eastcote game that sticks in my brain, I think.
Sounds good. So
we're going to mention Robert Chris now. He's not been mentioned at all. So I mean, I think you mentioned him earlier on. So up to two, who's a better player? You or Chris?
Him by a mile. He, my brother, obviously played with him at Wickham House, and then he came to Eastcote when I went there as well. Phenomenally talented batter keeper. He'd be the bloke, he'd hit the best shot of the day. Didn't matter who was playing, he'd hit the best shot of the day. He'd do something ridiculous with the gloves behind the stumps. But so in terms of talent, by far and away, much better player than I ever was or ever would be. He just struggled to put it all out there on the same day, really, and just struggle with that consistency a little bit. I think he would admit that himself. But, you know, he got 50 against Surrey first team at the Oval, playing for Loughborough University against a full first team attack of England bowlers. You know, that's how good he was. And he probably, yeah, he just never, I guess I was more steady and a bit more consistent and lacked the fluidity and the talent that he had and almost sat opposite ends of the scale. But yeah, he was a very, very talented player.
Is he up north now? Is he up playing now? He's moved, hasn't he, out of London from what I hear?
Yeah, he moved up to Huddersfield. Now he's in Manchester. He's only just stopped playing, actually. So okay. He sort of went and played in the Premier League, up the Huddersfield Premier League up there. Brilliant. I mean, brilliant competition.
Standards high clubs in Yorkshire. Yeah.
Spending a fortune on you know, clubs probably got wage bills bigger than non-league football clubs, you know, in terms of what they were investing. But and they played millions of games. They played Saturdays. They played league cricket on bank holiday Mondays. They played some Sundays. Whole communities out. It was, I loved going up and watching him play there. It really, really was good. But he was, when he left Eastcote to move up north, he was definitely a loss to our side, definitely in that time.
You mentioned Adam Rossington there before. I mean, when you were playing with him at Stanmore, obviously standout player, people could see he could play the game, but he really has gone and had a pretty impressive career in county cricket, hasn't he? I just looked at his stats. Now he's played well over 100 first-class games, plenty more T20 games. And I think he's still going. I'm pretty sure I saw him on the TV not so long ago. So did you see that coming?
Yeah, I did actually. And I know that isn't me being Mystic Meg with a crystal ball. Yeah. Rosso was, you know, we spoke earlier on about that the player journey and the early flyer, and that was Rosso. Everyone knew at 7 years old he was phenomenally talented. And makes the game look incredibly easy. Very laid back personality, which suits the shorter style now. You know, the shorter format is suited to that type of personality. He's been in South Africa playing in their T20. You know, he's done outstanding, done very well in the 100. So yeah, he was a loss when he left Middlesex. You know, he was a player probably a little bit ahead of his time in terms of where the club journey was in T20 cricket, and he would have been a real asset to us over the years. But yeah, still speak to him. He's obviously fallen on his feet now again at Essex, and then, yeah, he's still doing well, and he's a smashing kid.
Yeah, that's the way it goes, isn't it? People move on and you know, every respect to him. Always knows how well he has done, and, you know, every respect to him for that. Last question, though, and it's about the future, actually, and it's about the next Adam Rossington, really. If you could name us one name of a young cricketer, and you can take young as being as old or as young as you want, who we should keep an eye on, who would you go for? In Middlesex, obviously.
Yeah, I think I'm going to cop out here, and I'm going to say two names, but I think from, you know, from Ealing, Seb Morgan, just played in England under 19 World Cup as a 17-year-old. Played as a bowler, but he's an all-rounder, really, in our eyes. I think his batting's as good as his bowling. Didn't get the batting opportunities in that side, as often happens when you're a bit younger. So I think he's standout, and it'd be fascinating to see where his career goes. He's down at Winchester College, so Ealing sort of only see him in the back end of the season, really. But yeah, I suspect that he'll do some good things in league cricket this year and the next couple of years when he plays. And then Aryan Sawant, who is at Stanmore, was an East Coast boy originally. Just an incredibly stylish right-handed batter. Makes the bit that stands out when you watch a player like him is just the time that he has, you know, to play. And that's what I think the great batters have, is just in a moment of time that mere mortals like me just didn't ever have. And he makes the game look easy, and I love that in a batter. So if I was going to, yeah, a batter and a bowler, they would be my two. But there's a lot of very, very talented young players out there who hopefully are going to do well in the league in the years to come.
Yeah, I umpired Aaron in a 3-day game last year, under 18. It was a very good, very good batter. It's very classy.
And you name-checked Seb Morgenthau, didn't you? You said, we can watch him on the TV, because, of course, that tournament was...
Two definitely good players. Alan's, you know, got his eyes right there.
Good stuff. We will keep an eye on them and indeed everybody else over the course of the coming few weeks. I guess we're now beginning of March, Alan. I guess the pre-season friendlies can't be too far away, right? We're getting to the stage where you're going to get out there and you know, bat's going to be hitting ball.
Yeah, we're 11 days away. We play Hampshire at it was the Aegeus Bowl. I don't know who it's sponsored by now, but we play them on the 21st of March at the Aegeus Bowl in a 2-day game. So boys are out on grass at the moment under the marquee at Merchant Taylors. It's phenomenal sort of facility that we're able to practice on grass from the start of March. And yeah, we're outside 11 days time with the first game, Glamorgan at Lords, on the 5th of April. So, you know, a full month and a bit before the league season starts, the club league season starts.
Well, I'm sure water polo could be an option. Are they any good at water polo, Hampshire? Because you might have more chance of playing that than you do cricket. But 11 days from now, wow, that is early. But it makes a lot of sense if the championship's beginning at the beginning of April. Alan, thanks very much for taking the time to speak to us. We really appreciate it. Very best of luck for the coming season. I'm going to push that button again. You can watch every ball in Middlesex, either go to the games or watch an hour and a half when you get home from school, college, work, doing whatever you do, because it's all there to watch. And seriously, it's quietly addictive, as we found at Hough Towers over the course of the last 12 months. So best of British with that. Sal, we'll be back in a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, I think 2 weeks' time, Richard Johnson planned to come on. So yeah, the Middlesex theme continues before the season starts.
All good. Thanks, folks. Speak to you again soon.
Thanks, Alan. Cheers, mate.
Podcast Network. It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today
at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.